Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mr. Robertson's Neighborhood with Cleburne Railroaders General Manager Josh Robertson. Mr. Robertson's Neighborhood is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Cleburne manager questions about the Railroaders, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Josh's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, Josh provides some updates on what's going on in the American Association season. He tells us who is the best pitcher he ever caught. And is there a silly side to the general manager? Let's find out on Mr. Robertson's Neighborhood.
Well, let's welcome back Cleburne Railroader General Manager Josh Robertson. Josh, do you have any team updates for us?
Signed a few players that we haven't released yet, but we're gonna be sending those releases out shortly. I mean, I'm kind of being picky with the last five or six guys to sign, so but we did make some announcements last week when we brought back Zach Nerrier, and then we recently signed Mason Militakis, left-handed second rounder from the Minnesota Twins. Very excited about him. And Brian Saucedo, this guy has all of the tools to pitch in the big leagues. And then, of course, we got him in a trade agreement earlier on in the season from the Rockland Boulders, but Landon Holyfield, former Wichita Stater, announced that, we officially had signed him. Even though we got him in a trade, we still signed him to a contract. So, and Zach, out in center field again, one of the best outfielders in the league, no question. Landon Holyfield, he's a rookie with some good experience, and very excited about him. And then Brian Saucedo and Mason Militakis, two late inning guys that can come in and shut it down. So. Got 23, I think, now. We got five more to go to complete the 28 spring training roster.
I think it was you who told me once that it's not necessarily the big vets that you sign, because everybody has, a pretty good quality group of five vets on their team. It's the general manager's job to find five outstanding rookies, and that really makes the difference. And I would gather in these kind of last moves, you're looking for that pure gold rookie out there that really turns a good team into a great one. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, when we're allowed to have five veterans, which are generally your five or six plus year guys, your two LS5s, your four LS4s, and obviously the LS stands for limited service, and we've already talked about, they base your status off of professional innings pitched and at-bats in both independent and foreign and major league affiliated teams. So when you have your five vets, you got to be really picky with those, because they have to dominate. They have to dominate. And you generally, in my philosophy, everybody else's is different. You're not going to see a ton of veteran just everyday relief guys or mop up guys. You're going to see veteran closers, you're going to see veteran starters, and then you're going to see veteran position players when you got five to go from. So essentially, 11 of your 23 players are going to be in your double A, triple A, former big league types of guys. But when you have to have five rookies, then they can't just be a person that occupies a space on the roster, or fills up that classification that you need. The rookies have to contribute. If you're going to be successful, the rookies have to contribute. So we're off to, obviously, a great start with Colton Pogue. We're bringing in as our utility rookie player, and then Brian Saucedo, another rookie arm, and he's a guy that's, you know, had a full year of experience in our league, and he's been with the White Sox, so he's an experienced rookie. Landon Holyfield was, you know, with the Brewers and with Rockland, and now us. He's an experienced rookie. And then Grant Buck, who we got straight out of college last year, 6'6 first baseman, has a year under his belt and has been working hard this this off season. Another very good rookie. And then Edward Cruz, who can throw the absolute heck out of it. So yeah, we're blessed with the rookies that we have signed right now. These last four or five pieces are just to kind of put the final touches on any types of weaknesses or added strengths that we need.
Well, let's jump into fan questions this week, Josh. And the first one is from Craig, who would like to know if there's any updates on the state of the American Association season.
Well, Craig, you know, great question. Things are changing every day. This is uncharted territories for everybody. Just want to stress that our club is a very tight-knit family, and the value of the health and the safety of everyone in the organization, just not the players, the front office, but the fans and the workers and the sponsors and everybody involved. That's where we're focusing our attention first. You know, our league doesn't start until May, and we'll continue to educate ourselves as new information becomes available. But the safety of the players and the fans and the staff are the most important to the community. We have quarantined our office, so our staff is working from home just to participate and do our part to keep the social distancing and keep people away and try to slow down the spread of this. Our ownership group and every ownership group of every team in the league, they meet with the league weekly. The GMs are meeting weekly. We're utilizing all available information from the World Health Organization, CDC, the state and local departments. You know, we have ongoing contingency plans to be proactive with the real-time adjustments. And, you know, we're aware of the other leagues and teams that have canceled, postponed their events, and we're always going to do what's in the best interest of the people that come inside of our ballparks. So, you know, just I'm praying for our country and praying for the world and that we can find a vaccine for this and that we can slow it down and get people healthy and get back to normal life.
Amen to that. Zach says there seems to be big plans to build around the stadium. Will there be stadium improvements as well?
That's the plan. You know, it's always good to plan for stadium improvements to you know, have the amenities there for the fans, the modern day amenities that the fans want and need, and you know, we had talks this year about building a deck that extended off of the bar down the third base side that would go over the berm out to the field, which would have been pretty cool, and putting wall pads over the chain link in the outfield. Make it, you know, a little bit more private and up close and personal and a better, cleaner look. And then concreting and putting all brand new turf out by the batting cages right next to the kid zone area. You know, we've talked about a lot of things, water features, especially for the heat. And, you know, every year, obviously, it takes budgeting and planning and involvement from the city of Cleburne and our ownership group. But yes, with the ballpark only being 4 years old, it's already a beautiful ballpark. But it was built it was built to be able to make additions as we go along, as the attendance increases and there's a need for the amenities to draw the people out to the ballpark, then yes, we plan on ballpark improvements, but again, we'll have to sit and wait and see how everything pans out from our current situation.
Well, that was a good lead-in by you right there, because Zach would also like to know, we had over 100,000 fans at the Depot our first year. How do we get back to those kinds of numbers again? What kinds of promotions do you think would help with that?
Well, I think the main thing, Zach, is awareness. You know, we're still building on awareness. The team is going into its fourth season. There's still people in the surrounding areas that aren't fully aware that Johnson County has a minor league professional baseball team. And, you know, you can sit there and go, what? But, you know, I've seen it. You know, I've gone into gas stations and people have asked me about, you know, the logo I'm wearing on my chest. Is it Cleveland Railroaders? Yeah, minor league professional baseball team. Really? And so it's just about, you know, awareness and education and obviously the in-game entertainment and the promotions that you have, fireworks, you know, on-field promotions, video board commercials, all those things that you can do to bring the circus to the ballpark, as you say it, to entertain the fans. But, you know, anytime that a new facility is being built, there's something new. I mean, you've got to remember that there hasn't been a professional baseball team in Johnson County since the 1906 team. So there's going to be that initial excitement, people to come out in groves and come look at the new ballpark and look at the new team. And in the first 2 years, I can't think off the top of my head. I think Cleveland was 65 and 135 on the field. So, you know, a winning product out there on the field certainly helps those things. We went 57 and 43 last year. Attendance was up 23%. And we're only continue to working on things to keep a good product out on the field and keep people coming out to the ballpark. But like our owners preach to us, they certainly care about winning and losing. But from their perspective, when a fan leaves the ballpark, they don't want that fan to focus so much on whether we won or lost, but how good of a time they had. So we're always thinking of positioning certain things within the ballpark to make it easier to get to or what kind of entertainment we can provide, what kind of amenities we can build, all those things all come together. But the main thing now, and because it's still so young, is keep spreading the awareness of the baseball team.
Next up is Drew, who says, how do you think the Depot plays? I mean, what kind of park is it for players, if that made sense?
That does make sense. Honestly, Drew, I think the park plays straight up. It's got consistent dimensions left and center. It doesn't have some quirky little, you know, corner area that the home team can practice every day trying to hit it in that specific area because they know that they can get an extra base if they hit it into that area, or a hill to climb up, or a fence that jots in, you know, that you got to be aware of when you're flagging down a fly ball in the outfield. So, you know, the dimensions of our facility are major league dimensions. It's open, but not so open that, you know, you can consider the power alleys in left center and right center like Death Valley, like some ballparks that we play in. I think the park plays straight up. A lot of hitters would say that it's a hitter-friendly park. We certainly had good power numbers last year, but to combat that, we also had the second best ERA and pitching staff in the league. So certainly if it is a hitter-friendly park, then it wasn't affecting our pitching staff.
That's good to know. Gilbert Life and Oak, keeping 11 position players, does that mean you prefer to have the same nine guys playing 95-plus games a year?
Well, Gil, honestly, I would like for 2 weeks of the season to come about and half of those guys be signed with Major League-affiliated clubs. That's always the goal, is to get those guys signed back with affiliated clubs, but when we're allowed a roster size, max roster size of 23, and very few teams in our league actually carry the full 23, they just generally carry 22, 11 position players is what you're going to have, and the rest are going to be pitchers. You got to have, you know, you got to fill those arms up. So generally you have your third short, second, first, catcher, left, center, right, and then you've got your DH, and then the two guys sitting on the bench are generally, you know, backup catcher and utility player. And so we have many guys that can play many different positions, which is great, because it will allow for our coaching staff to sub those guys in to give a guy, you know, a day off, or to just allow him to have a DH day. So we've got an outfielder that's been playing 10 straight games and he's a little gassed and needs to get his legs up underneath him, then we can put another player out there and play the outfield, and then that outfielder can come in and either take a full game off or, you know, DH for the day. So having a roster size of 23, it's generally going to be 11 pitchers, 11 position players, or 12 pitchers, 11 position players, and some teams will go with 10 position players. So, yeah, unless the guys, God forbid, or, you know, anybody gets hurt, and hopefully if they do get picked up, then, yeah, you're going to see a lot of the same guys out there in the same positions on a nightly basis.
I'm trying to think, was it the 2017 Wingnuts team that you were GM with that had just 10 position guys, if I remember correctly?
Yes. Yep. And I want to say that was either the first or the second year that we were allowed to go 23 the full season. It used to be you could have 23 guys the first 2 weeks of the season, and then you had to carry 22, and then you could carry 23 the last 2 weeks of the season. But then it had to go back down to 22 for the playoffs, which was weird. So, you know, we finally made it a rule that you could carry 23 the entire year. And, yeah, we had 10 position players and loaded up on pitching.
And went to the championship series, so it worked out.
Championship series and lost in game 5 to Winnipeg.
Charles says, I don't know if you listen to any of the manager's shows Rob does, but Mike Meyer talked about the struggles that Alex Boshier's had last year and talked about how it was based a lot on the surface in Sioux Falls. He pointed out that Alex did better in Wichita with a turf surface. We have turf, so do you think that this makes him likely to have a good year?
I'm not going to base a pitcher's success or failures on natural surface versus artificial surface. We've had turf in Wichita for as long as the stadium has been around, it seems, whether it was the old Astrodome turf or the new generation turf, just because of the amount of traffic that we had on the field with not only the pro team but the junior college tournaments and the NBC World Series. And if it was a natural field, it certainly was going to be very tough to keep it from looking like the sandlot. You know, turf plays truer. A lot of guys go out there on the field, have a lot more confidence sometimes when they know that it's a surface that's not going to change with rain. It's not going to change with the off-season snow. It's not going to change in heat. It's going to be consistent all the time. Pitchers know that too when they're bouncing off the mound to try to field a bunt, this and that and the other. So I believe a little bit of the playing surface can be, you know, can affect the mental approach of going into it. But Alex Boshier is a good pitcher, period. You know, he came to us in Wichita in 2015, straight out of college, undrafted, pitched there 3 years, won 27, 28 games, pitched in more postseason appearances than any other pitcher in this league, or right up there with him. So he's a guy that knows what it's like to win 13 games in the season. He's a guy that knows what it's like to throw in a game four, game five, game one of a first-round playoffs or a championship series. He's an experienced guy in this league and, you know, top five in wins throughout the history of this league. So Alex is a great pitcher. You know, when he wanted to go to the Atlantic League and then got traded to Winnipeg, Winnipeg's a beautiful facility. Beautiful facility. Great playing surface. I know I've personally seen it plenty of times, but he actually had a better year in Sioux Falls last year than he did in Winnipeg the year before. So Alex is smart. He's a hard worker. He's got all the tools. He knows what's at stake. He knows he's coming into camp to earn a spot in that rotation. And he's gonna prepare himself to the best of his ability to put himself there. Like I said, we're bringing 28 guys to camp, and 23 make it. So everybody's got to come ready and prepared to do their part to force us to make a decision on who makes it and who doesn't.
Nick would like to know, how do you think the delay to the baseball season affects the new stadium in Wichita? Does this kind of take out some of the hype?
I think the delay to the baseball season affects every city. And I don't think that is affecting any type of hype in Wichita whatsoever. There's Wichita had a 1935 stadium. It was 85 years old. It was the sixth oldest in all of professional baseball. And so a lot of people have been seeing the same thing for a lot of years. This new stadium is a breath of fresh air for the city and community of Wichita, and I think when baseball does get back up and running, everybody's going to want to go see the Wind Surge play at the new beautiful ballpark. I don't think this is affecting the hype at all.
Next up, we have Isaac, who says, you suffered a bunch of injuries but kept playing. What made you call it quits and hang up your cleats finally?
When there's these distinct cracking noises every time I'd squat and stand back up, you know, on my knees. And I could go down and stand up and went.
That's a good reason.
That's a good reason. No, you know, I played up until I was 32. My wife and I got married when we were 27. We had our first child when we were 30. And, you know, I don't think if you ask any athlete, not just a baseball player, if you ask any athlete, you know, when is it time to shut it down? When's it time to say goodbye to it? I don't think anybody could come up with a real solid immediate answer. It's different for everybody. And it's honestly, for me, one of the toughest things that I ever had to do was walking away from being a ball player. But it was time to focus on my wife and my family and my career and stop getting the crap beat out of me behind the plate all the time. But, you know, now I'm nearly 45 years old, and I have absolutely no ambition whatsoever to ever strap any catcher's gear on. So time can take care of a lot of that.
We have a few questions for you from Hank. The first is, who was the best pitcher you ever caught? The best pitcher you ever caught.
Who was the best pitcher that I ever caught? Well, prior to Adam LaRoche being a major league first baseman, he was a pitcher. And they were actually trying to sign him as a pitcher, but he wouldn't sign as a pitcher. He wanted to sign as a position player, and he eventually did. I got to catch him. Nate Cornejo. I got to coach and catch him. But it's a very easy answer. My younger brother, Nate Robertson, was the best pitcher. And I've caught a lot of great pitchers. So I don't want to, excuse any credit out there that's due. But my brother, Nate Robertson, the best pitcher I ever caught. Obviously, he was 2 years younger than me, so I got to catch him 2 years in high school. Got to catch him in college. He went on a 16-year professional career, almost 9 years in the big leagues, pitched in Game 3 of the World Series in 2006 at the highest echelon of the game. Now, certainly it was entertaining when I got to catch him, as, he liked to shake me off a lot. And we'd have some very interesting mound visits, but no question, little bro is the best pitcher I ever caught.
Hank also asks, I read once that part of the job of a catcher is to be a good therapist as well. Do you think that has helped you with your job as GM as well?
Absolutely. I was talking about this to somebody the other day. I can't remember, but yeah, as catchers, you've got to be psychologists. There's a lot of different personalities that are going up there on the mound, and you got to know who your pitcher is and how they're going to react to certain things. Some guys, they want you to get right up in their grill and say, get it done. We need you right now. You're better than this, and they'll react and respond to that. And if you did that to some other pitchers, they would crumble. They need the pat on the rear. You're okay. Come on. Let's just play catch. So a lot of therapy goes into being a catcher and knowing your pitchers and knowing the hitters that are coming up to the plate and knowing your pitcher's abilities and the hitter's abilities, and really it just becomes a sequence in a thinking game. But a lot of that, too, goes into not just being the GM of a baseball team. It really goes into any smaller business that has a tight-knit office staff that you're there every day. Everybody knows each other on a first and last name basis. You're not just another number out there. When you're in that close of quarters and doing the same things every day together, then you need to know your staff too and how they respond to constructive criticism, how they respond to reward, non-reward, shouting, non-shouting. I think it all goes hand in hand, not in just playing the game, but also in everyday life.
Hank would also like to know, you don't seem to have any desire to manage. Why is that?
I wouldn't say that I don't have any desire to manage. I'd have to get the okay to go on the road for 50 games from the wife first. I mean, if I was single right now, no question, I'd throw the uni on and be in the third base box. I loved coaching. I coached high school ball for 8 years and summer collegiate ball for 3 years. I loved managing the team, managing the game. I love that part. That was initially aside from being a Major League Baseball player, which didn't happen, I wanted to coach. And I fortunately got to do that for some years, which led me into where I'm at right now. But I'll never say never, Hank. Never say never. But there are three females in my household that would have to give me the okay for daddy to do that. So we'll see.
Barry says, my son says baseball is too slow and boring. Tell this millennial why he is such a snowflake about the best game on earth.
Well, Barry, is he a millennial or is he Gen X? That's my first question. I pose that question to my daughter. I have a 14-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter, and they love coming to the ball games and watching the games. And 4-year-old, she's not like sitting there, Dad, did you see that curveball? You know, she's out playing in the playground. But you know, me and my 14-year-old, we talk a lot of baseball and strategies, and she plays softball, and she loves coming out and watching. Baseball is a lot slower, but honestly, you know, this is my opinion. I mean, I love watching college basketball, and I love watching college football and NFL football. But when it comes to NBA or hockey, I'd rather watch paint dry, you know, and those are generally faster-paced games. You know, the kids nowadays they're raised differently than we were back then. We didn't have Nintendos or Xboxes, or I don't even know the names or how to pronounce some of the game boxes. And we don't have any here in our household, even in today's world. Me and my brothers, we were all 2 years apart. We got bored. We'd go take a wax Pepsi cup and fill it up with sand in the backyard and play cup ball. And I don't even know if anybody knows what cup ball is anymore. But the days of kids just, you know, grabbing a glove, grabbing a bat, going outside, throwing the ball up in the air, hitting the ball into a fence, off a tee, doing those types of things have been sadly replaced by technology and phones and the inability to socialize. But you know, what's funny is, and I've been with my wife for 24 years, my wife, she won't say she hates baseball. She doesn't like baseball. She doesn't follow it. She doesn't like it. She supports everything that I do, and she always has. Like I said, we started dating when I was still playing college ball. But I think that the only reason that she started going out with me was because she thought I looked cute in a baseball uniform. You know, not because she liked the game. So, Barry, you bring him out to the yard, and we'll work on him. We'll work on changing his mind about truly understanding and loving the game of baseball, because it is the greatest game in the world.
Alan says, all that driving you did between Cleveland and Wichita, you must have some great stories to tell about idiots you came across.
Oh, there are some good stories. There are some good stories. Most of it involving, you know, road rage and just having fun with that. Some serious, but, you know, all in all, you know, stop off for gas and grab a snack and get to sit there. If you have a chance to meet somebody new and talk with somebody, you know, it was, I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I still, you know, I was in Cleburne just a couple of weeks ago, and every trip's different. Some are scary. I remember against my wife's wishes, we had the GM meetings for our league in Minnesota in October. And the flights out of Wichita to Minnesota were just, I couldn't find a good time, and they were just astronomical. So I found a direct flight, and there was no direct flights from Wichita to Minnesota, so I had to, you know, I would have had to have connected. And I found a direct flight out of Dallas to Minnesota for like $500 less, and my flight was at 7 a.m., and I told Monica that I was going to leave at 11 p.m. the night before and just drive straight to the airport and get on a plane and go to Minnesota. And she was like, I don't like that, driving overnight, it's late, you better get to bed at 8 o'clock and get a few hours of sleep. And I was currently in the middle of building a flower box out in the garage, so I told her I would get to bed, but that didn't happen. So I wrapped everything up, went and packed, got in the car at 11 p.m. Figured, you know, if I can get to Cleburne in 5.5 hours by myself with one stop, I can get to DFW in about 5. That gets me there, you know, a few hours before the flight takes off, and I should be golden. I already had, I was already checked in on my phone, and I didn't have any checked baggage, just to carry on, and I was good. And then I got to about Denton, Texas, at about 3:30 in the morning, and I hope the drivers are okay. Two semis collided with each other and both burst into flames. One of them burnt completely. I mean, burnt all the rubber completely off the tires and wheels, and all you could see was a metal frame left of that one, and then the other one just burnt up about half the trailer. But they had traffic shut down from, oh, I don't know how far we had to take, I think from Denton all the way to where you turn off to go to the Dallas-Fort Worth off 35 was completely shut down. You had to take access roads. I'm like, I'm going to miss my flight. More importantly, like I said, after driving by it and slowly getting to see up there on the highway down from the access road, the carnage of that, I hope everybody was okay. But, yeah, sometimes when you choose to drive, you can run into some scary situations like that.
Patty says, did you say something about drinking hot sauce as a superstition? How does that work?
Well, in our media room in Wichita upstairs, we had a table in the corner, which is where all of the food would get laid out for the media and for our staff. So every night at 6 o'clock, dinner was prepared, it was set on this table, and then our staff would come up in shifts and fix them a plate. The media, you know, everybody reporting the game or filming the game would come in and eat. There was quite a spread every night. Concessionaires were great. They always had the condiments on the table. Tabasco and salt, pepper, and I like spicy food. And it was a dare that this started back in 2014, which is the year that we won it. We were playing in the first round, and I think it was against Laredo. And it was a tight ball game, but we weren't playing very good. You know, sometimes when you're just sitting there and you're watching the same thing, it's like the hole gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you got to get up and you got to walk away or turn your hat backwards. You know, a lot of people do a lot of different things. Somebody dared me to pick up the Tabasco bottle and just start sucking it down, and so I did. And then about vomited, and my face got real red, and they didn't have enough. There was no milk in the stadium, so there was not enough cold beverages to extinguish that flame. But from that point on, if we were like out in a funk or we needed to switch something up, then I'd take a couple shots of Tabasco sauce to get us going. And it seemed to work, so I stuck with it. So it kind of became known that, you know, if we were in a pickle of a situation, Josh was going to be up there drinking Tabasco. And it was my own bottle, so I didn't want anybody to think that, like, I was sucking out of Tabasco sauce, and then media guy comes in and using that same bottle. It said Josh on it, do not touch, and was put in a different location. But that's the story of the Tabasco.
And I do have to say, I got to witness this. So, it did have its success. We'll call it. And we end this week with Connie, who says, "You always seem so serious. Is there a silly side to Josh Robertson?"
There is a silly side, Connie. There is a silly side. I'm sorry. I tried being more upbeat in the last show than I was the one before. I do take the team seriously and my job seriously and my family seriously, but I can be funny. I've got some jokes. Maybe I can tell some jokes on the next show. Rob's seen me. I can be silly.
Absolutely.
I can crow with the best of them. I'll put it to you that way. So I've got plenty of sarcasm in me, and I do everything I can every day to make my girls laugh or smile, just because it's a lot better seeing them that way than grumpy. So I am serious, but I do have a funny side to me. I'm silly. Maybe the seriousness comes from the upbringing of a father who was a master sergeant in the United States Army for 23 years. We had some pretty select ways of doing things growing up. But me and my brothers are plenty. We're plenty ornery, plenty. So I hope that answers it.
I think that was an excellent answer. Thanks for joining us this week, Josh.
Thank you. Stay safe and be healthy.
We want to thank Josh Robertson for joining us on Mr. Robertson's Neighborhood. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Cleburne General Manager, please send them to us at askjosh@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's askjosh@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Monday evening so we can give the GM a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Mr. Robertson's Neighborhood.